and welcome to another episode of Baking Matters. I'm your host, Lindsay Hughley, and joining me today is Carl Goss. Carl is an attorney who's built his career inside the engine room of bank regulation and enforcement. He began at the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, working alongside veteran examiners in the Special Supervision Unit and contributing to multiple Dodd-Frank rulemakings. He later represented financial institutions before the CFPB, OCC, FinCEN, the Federal Reserve, the FDIC, and others, giving him a rare, full perspective view of supervision, compliance, investigations, and enforcements. He also advises banks on mergers, acquisitions, and security offerings, rounding out a truly comprehensive practice. Carl serves on the Banking Law Journal Board of Editors, has contributed to the Law of Financial Institutions, and authored Practical Law's regulatory summaries across several states. He holds a JD from New York University School of Law and a BA from Rice University. He's been recognized by the Legal 500 United States in Finance, in FinTech, and served on the Law Review's expert panel. Carl brings a deep experience, a sharp insider's perspective, and a steady hand to every corner of financial institution life. Welcome, Carl.
Lindsay, that's such a nice introduction. Thank you so much. I'm happy to be with you. I'm happy to talk with you and your members and to explore a little bit more about banking and crypto.
Yeah, absolutely. So here at Banking Matters, we really love to hear kind of like, what's the background story of how you got into working with banks?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think like many people in their careers, it kind of, you just like fall into it, right? In some ways. When I was an undergrad, I kind of knew that I wanted to go to the law school. I was actually a budding musician and then came to the realization that I was nowhere near good enough to make a living at it. So I needed a profession. I was attracted to law school, you know, issues of justice, issues of actually macroeconomics. The law really is great in helping organize the economy. So went to law school. When I went to law school, I was interested in an area called project finance. You know, it's probably because I built so many Legos when I was a kid. So I liked the idea of contributing to like a big highway or a big sports stadium and being like, yeah, I wrote really long contracts to govern that thing. But when I graduated law school, this was in the Great Recession, and there was actually no project finance work going on. I had a great mentor. I was doing an internship at the EDNY, which was, you know, the DOJ's office in Brooklyn. Guy told me, what about public service? And I said, what about public service? So I applied to the OCC, telling myself, well, banks, it's kind of like infrastructure. It's just a little bit more ethereal, a little bit more not so directly observable. But it did scratch the itch of having some kind of interest in an industry and having an interest in an industry that really mattered for the macroeconomy. And I remember I was invited down to DC for an interview. I thought the interview went really well. And at the end, you know, I said, just curious, like, how many spots do you think you have? And they looked at each other and said, we think we have about 6 spots this year. And so at that moment, I remember my first thought was, well, it was nice meeting you. I'll probably never see you again, but that's okay. But they liked me and they said, if you'd like to work with us, we're happy to give you a job. It was easiest and best decision of my life, except for marrying my spouse. They said yes, and I said yes, and I worked there for 3 years. It was a great place to work. You learn so much about banking, the industry, the people, the business side, the legal side, and they're very supportive in letting people take the initiative to teach themselves stuff and to raise their hand and say, yes, I will take that responsibility and then run with it. So I did a lot of that. I learned a ton. And then I decided to go into private practice where I've been ever since. I did a little bit of work in DC with a big DC law firm on CFPB enforcement matters for large banks. And then I felt like I really wanted to round out my skill sets. So I learned a lot about the regulatory side at the OCC. I learned a lot about big banks, CFPB, consumer compliance enforcement. No experience in mergers acquisitions, no experience in capital markets. So I found a great group at what was then called Hunton and Williams. Prior to that, called Jenkins Gilchrist, but now is called Hunton Andrews Kurth. And they had and have a fantastic community banking group. Most of the banks we work with are about $500 million to $10 billion in total assets. I'm based in Dallas now. About half of our clients are in Dallas and half are outside of, half of our clients are in Texas and about half are outside of Texas. So it's really a pleasure working with community banks and help them realize their strategic vision. There's a lot of different visions out there, and it keeps it really interesting to work with people and to come up with solutions to help them achieve their business objectives. So that's kind of the really high level story, Lindsay.
Yes. And I love, as I continue doing the podcast and talking to different people from all over, the amount of people that literally fall into banking and then it just clicks. It's so often and so frequent, but it's so wild how once you do get into the industry, how it just sparks a passion in you. And I mean, that's what happened for me personally. I thought I was going to be a CPA from the moment I graduated high school all through college. I worked for a firm for 3 months and I said, oh, this is not for me. And I went straight back to banking, which is what I did the whole time I was in college. And so, like you said, being able to see such a vast, especially in this position now that I have, the members that I get to work with, such a large scale. There are so many visions. There are so many different avenues that banks can go. You can get as creative as you want or stay as conservative as you want to. And so with that in mind of how vastly different community banks are, I would love to dig into crypto and kind of see... Sure. And really just honestly start with like a very basic question with, because I know that this is kind of sitting at the forefront of everyone's mind, especially with stablecoin and the Genius Act. But what would you say are some practical implementation steps for community banks today as far as regarding crypto?
Sure. As far as regarding crypto, I think my baseline advice is to encourage people to stay involved with informing themselves of all the developments that are going on. And just spending a little bit of time thinking about, is there a place for digital assets in our overall strategic plan? The answer might be no, which is fine. Bankers are just really curious people. So just be curious about it. And, you know, you can try to open your own account and just kind of play with it and see what it's like. But I would just encourage people to stay engaged, you know, keep reading the newspaper. You don't have to hire a bunch of people. You don't have to go all in on Bitcoin. But be engaged, ask questions, and think, is there a place for this in our business plan? Again, the answer might be no, which is fine too.
And so kind of stemming off of that, do you have any exposure or have you been involved with any very kind of unique or interesting use cases for crypto within community banks yet?
I have, but maybe I'd want to talk a little bit about where I do think it's going to come into play for a fair number of banks. So making loans secured by digital assets. Right. So I think the market cap, I mean, it's going up and down every day, but the market cap on Bitcoin is something like $3 trillion, maybe a little bit less now, but it's a big asset class. So banks lend all the time. They lend against all kinds of assets all the time. We're now getting into a situation where the market cap is large enough that it's pervasive enough, it's widely held enough, it's valuable enough to be collateral for banks. So I'm seeing all kinds of community banks, even if they don't want to be involved in digital assets, a customer will probably ask them, hey, would you accept my Bitcoin as a collateral for a loan? Right. And, you know, strip away the idea of Bitcoin collateral. I mean, a loan is a loan. Y'all know how to do loans. There's nothing special or crazy about it. It's just the collateral is a little bit different. If you're a community bank and you've made any security-based loans, I would say that's probably the closest analog, right? You have something, it may not technically be a security, but it functions a lot like a security has a risk profile like a security. The controls involved are the same kind of controls that you would think of if you were taking a security interest in a securities account. So you should be able to work with professionals to set up whatever you need to do that kind of business. So I would encourage people, if they get the question, hey, can you do a Bitcoin secured loan? Not to say, no, go down the street. It would be, well, that's a really interesting question. Maybe we can. We've never done it before. Give us a little bit of time. We'll look into it and we'll get back to you. And I'm pretty sure you can make it work. So I just wanted to flag that. That's not an interesting use case, but that's probably going to be the most common use case that you come across.
Awesome. And so, do you feel that banks are, with kind of the conversation you said, do you think that taking in crypto and kind of, if it is something that they decide fits into their strategic plan, do you think that this is something banks should, that over the next few years, that it is going to be a larger market, a way that banks can really benefit to kind of pivot and serve their communities in a different way? How do you see that kind of evolving over the next couple of years?
Yeah, I would say first and foremost, it really depends on your customer base and your communities. There's going to be some customer bases and communities that are probably more interested in working with digital assets and crypto. And those banks are going to have to be a little bit more nimble and open to innovation. But if your customers, you know, are not that interested in it, I think there's less of an imperative. But even there, like I said, I encourage banks to continue to be curious and continue to stay well informed. I want to advocate for a balanced approach. I do want people to stay interested and curious, but I also don't think anyone is going to have to revamp their strategic plan to cover digital assets. I do think it's going to expand. I think the jury is still out on what the regulation for the Genius Act will look like. And those regulations are going to shape the marketplace. We see a couple of large players lining up to try to be first in line to take advantage of what the market may look like, right? I think for most community banks, I think they will see the space in the development part of it to those players. And then the question will be, if we're going to be involved, maybe how can we partner with them or become customers of them to provide the services to our customers?
Yes. And I'll be honest, as a VCO, while we've been dealing with the penny movement and trying to adjust to that, the advice that's been super conservative has been, since there is no regulation about how we need to manage and move forward with this, why don't we wait and see to kind of see what the larger people are doing so that we can kind of mirror that just simply because I feel like this is what we've talked about a lot with the community banks that I serve is that there are several different aspects that banking is kind of stepping into that is kind of the Wild West. We've not really been into something. And so I know that a lot of community banks, they hear crypto, they freak out because it is so unknown. But I do love how you suggested get your own account, play around, figure it out. Because even when me personally, I understand the concept, but the thought, like sometimes the thought process, it gets overwhelming. Outside of practicing and dabbling in it yourself, what other exposures can banks or leadership give themselves to kind of, because I know at the end of the day, it's going to be kind of whoever has the idea that, oh, I feel like crypto would be a great fit for us. They're going to have to pitch that to executive management and the board. What are some pros of getting involved with it and that kind of thing?
Yeah. So some very concrete thoughts on what banks can do. I think one, they can think about designating somebody internal to the bank who does have the enthusiasm and the interest to kind of become the subject matter expert in-house, to be that person. You know, it could be someone in operations, it could be someone in credit, you know, poll your employees and see who maybe there's someone already doing this, right? Yeah, and you don't have to do anything special. You could say, hey, you know, you keep bringing this up at lunch all the time. It sounds like you know a lot. Why don't you, you know, we will formally designate you the subject matter expert at our bank. And, you know, maybe we'll give you some opportunities to talk to management about the things you've learned. So that's one easy thing that you can do as a bank. I think a second thing that you can do, I know law firms or accounting firms or audit firms routinely give, you know, 1 hour presentations to boards or senior management on what they're seeing happen in the space. So that's another very easy way to hear different perspectives from people that are working with different players in the space. So I think those are two concrete suggestions that come to mind right away. You know, designate internal subject matter experts and consider, you know, just hiring for like a 1 hour presentation, some people from outside the bank.
Absolutely. And also I would love to hear your perspective as far as, because at the end of the day, whenever a bank's bringing on, branching out into anything, the main thing that's going to be considered is the risk. So when you're looking at incorporating crypto into your strategic plan, what are the innate risks that you are being exposed to? Do you have any insight on that?
Sure, absolutely. It depends on exactly how you see digital assets and crypto fitting into your products and services. Lindsay, something else just came to mind, so I'm going to jump back and say the third thing you can say is you can ask your examiners. When they come in and they examine you, you can say, hey, guys, you know, we're hearing so much about crypto, these crazy Banking Matters podcast people. They even got a guy on to talk about crypto. Like, what's all the hype about? We don't get it. What are you seeing? And oh my gosh, I am sure they will talk your head off on what they're seeing. So ask your regulators. That's number three.
That is great advice. I do always love when they're in and we are working on something new. Hey, this is in draft stages right now. We're working things out. What's your opinion on this? It is my favorite thing to do. They are definitely number one resource, especially when they're in the bank. Yeah. We've got new stuff going on. So excellent point.
And then once you throw that question out, don't talk.
Yeah.
Just let the silence sit and they'll fill it. Yes. Okay. So yeah. So you were asking about risk profile.
Yeah.
So whenever we do any kind of digital asset project, there's always two questions. The first question is it permissible, right? So if you're a bank and if you want to do a new product and service, you have to be able to point to something in the law that says this activity is permissible. Most other industries don't have that problem. As long as it's not illegal, they can do it, right? But with banks, even if it's legal, you have to be able to show that it's permissible, meaning you have to point to something in the law that says, oh, there's something in the law that says I have the right to do this. So that's the first question. And then if it's permissible, then we get to this question of safety and soundness and risk management. And so what kind of controls do you put up? So for example, if you're going to lend against it, I think the biggest concern is market risk, right? You want to make sure that you set your LTVs, you know, an appropriate level, just like securities-based lending, you know, just like, you know, CRE. You have all the concepts. It's all the same concepts. The good thing is that, you know, unlike a shopping mall, it's pretty easy to liquidate Bitcoin. So yes, it's true that markets can change, but you also don't have to go through a foreclosure process or a judicial sale. You know, you don't have to get an appraisal. You just, boom, you hit sell and you get your money back. You know, I think a lot of people look at the market volatility and say it's risky, and you say, well, it can be risky, because of the market volatility. But I think that there are good ways to manage it. And in part, like I said, I think if you put in the operations and if you establish appropriate LTVs, notwithstanding market swings, you can feel pretty confident that you're not going to lose money on a loan. So market risk is, I would say, the primary risk if you're talking about lending against crypto. If you're doing anything payments related with crypto, I think you get into more AML risk, operational risk, fraud risk, chargeback risk. So the same kind of risk profile that I think you see with wires, right? So there's all kinds of wire fraud, there's AML issues with wires, you know, anything payments related, it's a similar type of risk profile, I would say. Of course, it's a little bit different because wires are not stable coins, but a lot of the ideas apply. Liquidity risk management, especially if you are taking it on balance sheet, which some people are thinking about now. If you're talking about custodying digital assets, that's definitely a lower risk activity, I would say. And it's also an activity that a lot of people have been doing for three or four years now. So I think it's well trod and well understood. So if you're talking about the risk profile of digital assets, you have to think about what is the product and the service. And then I would suggest trying to think of an analog that you already do to that particular product or service. You can probably think of one, and then the risk profile would look something like that.
Awesome.
Such good insight. And so you mentioned fraud, comparing it whenever you were talking about as far as payments. I know that we have had several members kind of ask about what types of fraud can still occur, like within the, for instance, the stablecoin framework. Do you have any exposure or thoughts on those specifics as far as the fraud involved?
It's a good question. Because it's so new, I don't think the fraud risk profile is quite as well understood. I do think there's going to be a subset of customers where a transaction occurs that maybe the customer authorized, but maybe authorized it under false pretenses or a misrepresentation. Maybe you or your members are familiar with Bitcoin ATMs, and that's been a source of operational and fraud risk lately. So I could see, you know, a customer saying, I'd like to do some stablecoin transactions, and, you know, they think they're talking to grandma, but they're not. They're talking to somebody else, and they authorize a transaction, and then they're trying to basically claw it back, but maybe there's no good mechanism to claw it back. You know, it's not like Visa where there's a card dispute or something like that. A lot of it is going to be understanding operationally what's possible, and then making sure that all of the people at the bank know what that entails, and then putting them in a position to educating the customers so they understand what that all entails. It's not going to stop stuff, but it's going to hopefully lead to people making better informed choices. And hopefully that's going to help.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Carl. This has been great. We do like to wrap up with one piece of advice that you'd like to leave our listeners.
Oh my gosh. One piece of advice to leave listeners. I would just say, I love the bankers that I work with. Just keep doing what you're doing. You know, it may seem stressful and it may seem like everything's going crazy and you're faking it till you're making it, but you're actually doing really good work and you're actually helping your customers. And, you know, it's a pleasure to work with y'all. So I just encourage you to stay curious and keep experimenting.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Carl. And for the rest of our listeners, that's Banking Matters. Yeah.